All right. So today I would like to address some of the points that were made yesterday and put them into perspective and answer some of the questions that were raised. So this is still the session on continuations. And I would like to cover the grammar of direct style and continuation passing style programs, and then in answer to Yanis's point, to make you appreciate the effect of administrative reductions if you CBS transform a program. And then I will come back on the example of listing list suffixes and list prefixes. Okay, so in a nutshell, whenever you consider a functional program. A program is an expression. An expression can be an application written with infix at, or it can be a trivial term, and a trivial term is a variable or a lambda. And this is the prototypical grammar of programs in so-called direct style. We can add literals, we can add conditionals, we can add letrec, but bottom line, it's that one. And slightly annotated compared with yesterday, so I annotated them with the name of the syntactic categories. This is the original CPS transformation that is a syntax-directed encoding of, okay, here, lambda terms into continuation passing style. So if you code that into whichever language you fancy to write in, that will translate whatever is between the double brackets into a new lambda term. And that new lambda term is in continuation passing style. And this one is due to Gordon Plotkin in 1975. So it's the definition. That's what we looked at yesterday without the annotation DPROG or FOTRS, which is first order term rewriting system. That's the official name. So the output of that, it's always a good idea to look at, to try to characterize the output of a compiler, the output of a transformer. Looks okay, like this, and this is the grammar of continuation passing style program, and it's worth looking that every call is a tell call. There are only calls here where there is a function, its argument, and a continuation, and here there is a continuation that is applied to a result. So when we make a call, we pass to a function an argument and a continuation, and we make a return, we call a continuation on a trivial term. And we can read off this grammar that all calls are tell calls, all subterms are trivial, and therefore all the problems of evaluation order independence are just vanish. It really helps you to write the BNF of the target of your program transformer, and I can give you a few examples. So one of them is that if you use a typed programming language and you specify these two BNFs as types, then you can write your transformer, and then the typing system of your meta language will tell you that your transformer is well typed, and that's a precious information. A second example, which was used by my friend Charles Consell 10 years ago when he was doing runtime code generation, so he's doing partial evaluation. He's taking C programs, and then he specializes them with respect to some data, and then he spits out specialized code. And the observation is that the specialized code is not random. It's constructed out of templates. And the templates can be detected by a so-called binding time analysis, where you can see what part of the programs are going to be executed at partial evaluation time, and which part of the program are going to be constructed. So at the time, this was the mid-90s, people were very much interested in runtime code generation. So at the University of Washington, Craig Chambers, for example, made a super-duper system that was doing runtime code generation of C, which he called dynamic C. And he named the system DYC, so D-Y-C. So for everybody who's American gets it, for the rest of us, dicey sounds like something chancy. When you play with a game of dice, and you have something dicey, you're taking a chance. So it's a pun. It's like fib if you program in Lisp or Scheme or. So, on the one hand, you have the super enormous system where there is a whole infrastructure of code, a compiler, which is geared towards doing runtime code generation. On the other hand, you have the little European guy who is looking at things a little more tightly, and then he observes that the code which is being generated is being generated with in an extremely regular way, as predicted by the output of the binding time analysis. And then his student, François Noël, has the very neat observation that if he uses just GCC, he can look into the .o file, and he finds the templates that are actually already compiled. So all that he needs to do is to compile using GCC the program after binding time analysis, then go into the .o file before linking, find the templates that have already been compiled by GCC, and all that he needs to do is runtime code generation, is string together these templates. So it's super efficient because it has been already compiled by GCC. The code will be efficient, and the actual generation is also efficient because basically GCC has done all the work. So the moral of the story is that it's really a good idea to look at the output of the program transformers that you consider, because they give you lots of information that you can reuse. So if you're curious, it's François Noël and Charles Concel, and it's in a Popol 1995 paper, I think, 1996. So here we have the grammar of the output, and so we can use it to type the transform itself. Okay, so if you use the rewriting system as stated, Yanis, this is your answer, and you take a term such as lambda x applied to x, which is just a random one, then that will generate that big guy. Okay, and the tension is that you have a direct style term for which you will do some processing, and if you CPS transform it, then there is the processing induced on the CPS code will be the actual reductions corresponding to the source one, plus a heck of a lot of administrative reductions that are just induced by the transformation. So, for example, Guy Steele identified that, and then it had an ad hoc way to simplify the CPS code. And what I showed you yesterday, and I will come back into detail there, is that you can do it at compile time. So, roughly, after Guy Steele, Amr Sabri and Matthias Feleisen made the following method, which is completely systematic. So the idea is to annotate all the new lambdas introduced by the transformation, then reduce all the redexes that have annotated lambda, and then erase the remaining lambdas, and have the theorem that shows that it doesn't diverge, and it's all well-behaved. So now they have staged the CPS transform into two. So an example is that lambda x applied to x is CPS transform into that guy, where all the new lambdas have an overline, and the lambdas that do not have an overline were the one that already existed, which is just that one. That one comes from the source term, all the other ones are overlined. And then there is a big engine that starts and reduces everything that can be reduced, which gives that. And that one cannot be reduced any further. You remove the annotations, and that gives you that one, which is the thing, which is the good guy. So that's option number one. You can also do it in one pass by integrating the reductions at CPS transformation time by doing the control flow analysis that I outlined yesterday. And you just ask yourself, where does that lambda flow? And hey, I'm always constructing a better redex. Why don't I reduce it at compile time instead of at runtime, which is the idea of normalization by evaluation? And that idea has been had independently by Andrew Appel or by himself in Standard North New Jersey, Andrzej Filiński and myself, and Mitch Wand a few years later. And it looks like that. So now the underline means generate code, and the overline is, say, it is compile time stuff. So now you have a highly high order program, which in one go will give you the CPS transform program after administrative reduction. And it basically looks like that. So if you either look in representing control or you have finished what I suggested yesterday, you will have obtained something like that. And the type of the transform says that it takes an expression in direct style. It takes a functional accumulator that will map a trivial term into a serious term in continuation passing style, and the result will be in continuation passing style. So, and it uses continuations in a rather neat way itself. So that's continuation at work for you. And if you look, for example, to a beautiful paper by Ken Diebwig, the guy who made ChaseScheme, and his colleagues, it's called Destination-Driven Code Generation, and it's based on the same idea. And that's in the heart of the ChaseScheme compiler. It's the only paper which is published where you can see why it's such a great compiler, and it's based on that very same idea. You predict where you're going to generate code, and you adapt the code generation based on that. And how do you do that? Well, by control flow analysis. Okay? So, example, if you take lambda x applied to x, and you CPS transform, bonk, it gives you that guy in one go. All right? So I can't resist telling you another story about this one-pass CPS transform. So it's kind of a lesson. You should have killer apps, and you should make sure that whatever it is that you write in your paper or in your thesis, your killer app is satisfied. The impressive example that illustrates what you do, that's a killer app. And so the killer app that I was interested while developing that was proportional recursion. So I was very concerned that tail calls should be mapped into tail calls. And in the CPS transform, a tail call means that the continuation which is here is the same as the continuation that was being passed here. But if you write the CPS transform in a naive way, as you will have done if you have done the exercise of yesterday, you are not going to obtain k. You are going to obtain lambda x k of x, which is a small, which on the surface looks like it's semantically equivalent, but it's just more code. So I pointed out how neatly the CPS transform could be adapted to do that. I fought tooth and nail with the referees and my co-author so that it would make it in the paper. And the following summer, Andrew Appel had a summer intern called Trevor Jim, who at the time was young. And Andrew said, well, there is that idea in this paper. Why don't you try it on Standard MLF New Jersey? So Trevor took the compiler, which was 0.93 at the time, and changed one thing, which was the CPS transform, which is an early phase in the compiler. And he made it so that whenever there would be a source code, a tail call in the source program, it would be mapped into an eta-reduced continuation rather than lambda x, k of x. And that's all. Then he recompiled the compiler and run the benchmarks. And then they observed that with that little change, the whole compiler was running 12% time more efficient and 13% space more efficient. So you never know what happens with compilers. And it's really a tension between garbage in, garbage out, and thinking that the next phase will clean up after you. It's not always true. And this is an example of that. So when you do something like that, you should really believe in what you do and then go to the end of your thoughts, because usually that's where the payoff is, and it's unique to you. OK, if you want to know more about that kind of things, the whole derivation of going from the term rewriting system to the one pass is described in section 2 of representing control. If you're embarrassed with high order functions in your transform, then you should look at this paper that is giving you how to obtain it in one pass in a first order way. And if you are really into CPS transformations and you're kind of lost in the vast number of CVS transformations that are out there. This is a paper for you, which just shows that they're all the same elephant. And the ways, the tools used in that paper are the tools that I'm telling you about, namely defunctionalization and the like. Okay? So if you look, for example, at Essentials of Programming Language, they have a very, very clever CPS transform, which use their own idioms and their own way of thought. And it's context-based. So what that paper points out is that if you just realize that the context are defunctionalized continuations, then you realize it's the same CPS transform. So it really pays off to have these inter-derivation tools, because they let you compare things that have been developed independently. And either you find that they are the same, which is good, because then everybody agrees, or you find that they are different, in which case it's interesting to see the differences. For example, a few years ago, I was looking at George Kuhn's master thesis at the University of Chicago, where he was looking at the W algorithm of Damas and Milner. And then he was resetting it in the case of the CEK machine, and said that it was a new way to look at type inference. And I challenged him to see whether what he had done wasn't to take the W algorithm, CPS transform, defunctionalize, and that's what he had invented. And he came to me at the following SCFP and he said, yes, that's the case. So whenever we find this, I mean, good ideas tend to come in clumps, and when everybody agrees that it's the same algorithm in different forms, that's a good sign. It means we have reached a fixed point. Okay, so if you like this kind of things, but as Matt said, continuations are perhaps not completely for you because they are pervasive or whatever, maybe monadic style is for you. So it's if you look at the three steps for the CPS transform that I told you about, you name intermediate result, you sequentialize the computation, you introduce continuations. Well, you stop at the second step, you don't introduce continuations. And what you obtain is anormal forms, monadic style. So what I would like you to do, no pressure, right? But it's a feel-good exercise. You'll learn something doing it, and you'll be happy that you found it. You look at the original paper on ANFs, which publishes a one-pass transform into a normal form, and then you try to type it in ML, try to define the types, and see it type checking or not, and then you'll learn something. And then if you're into a sleek generalization that handles if then else and or, there is that paper that you should find fun. And they all use the techniques that I've shown you until now. Okay, so back to the very first exercise, unlisting list prefixes and unlisting list suffixes. So the suff is in red, and the next slide has pre in red. So listing list suffixes is easy because lists are linked from left to right. Okay, so that's not one recursive descent and you're done. Unlisting list prefixes is hard exactly because the lists are linked from left to right. And what I ask you to do, it's for your own good, is not use take, not use append, not use reverse, not use map, not use fold. I really want you to go through the recursive motion of traversing lists. Okay? So you should write a recursive descent of a list, and you should only call the list constructor. And then the interesting thing is that you are going to obtain a program which is in defunctionalized form. And it's interesting to identify that and then to see what it is exactly that you have coded in defunctionalized form and what does it correspond to once you refunctionalize it. So this is for functional programmers, right? So it is an enlightening thing. And in the end of the day, you will conclude, yes, it is the same elephant. Okay, so it's a simple exercise. It's an aha kind of exercise. And I warmly invite you to do it. All right, I like buzzwords. And so I have two of them today. So one was made, I think, Menosong by Harrison from the Beatles. And he said that you can lead a horse to the water, but you can't make it in drink. So you're the horses, and I'm leading you. And I'm begging you to do the exercises, but I can't do them for you. All that I can do is to lead them there. And I can talk until my face turns blue. I know I've tried. And it's not going to help at all if you don't do the exercises. And the second, the yang of that yin, is that semantics is called by need. You should only learn stuff which is necessary, as it is necessary. So again, I can tell you everything about continuations, and I will. But you'll just listen to me politely. It's not going to change your life. You're not going to feel that it's actually necessary. Now, the exercises that I'm giving you force you to realize why they are helpful and why you would want to ever, ever, ever do that. And once you realize why you want to do that, well, then you'll be in a shape of mind where you can actually appreciate why you would like delimited continuations, why you would like a typing system for them. So I was telling you, some of you over lunch, that these exercises are small. Okay, and they are small because we don't have much time. But they're also rewarding. Okay, you really feel good after solving them. And they are finally useful. So let's take a simple but fascinating example. Me. It's a quote from Woody Allen. I look at my students, PhD, and I've been stuffing them that kind of exercises, and now they are, doing great things that in some sense, don't bear so much resemblance, but they are flexible enough and muscled enough to actually do it. So they have been working with, like, Lars Back and developing the V8 JavaScript engine in Google on the other side of the street in Aarhus, Denmark. And they Google doesn't seem to have enough of my students. They want to hire them, like, in whom I hanging on to. So it's really worth to do the exercises, and it's going to pay off in the long run, so you won't waste your time doing it. So I would like to spend until the break you doing the exercises and me going with you about checking you out. And for the last lecture, once you realize why continuations are nice or useful or necessary, then I will tell you what have been the progress, what people have done, and where they can be useful. As of yesterday, if you believed my propaganda, you already know that evaluation contexts, which are difficult to write, are easy to derive if you use the CPS transform on defunctionalization. So if you ever have to write to reason with contexts, you now have a practical way to get them. And each of these exercises has a little gem which I would like you to discover and enjoy. So please do in any order you like. Listing list prefixes, so that's probably for the Java or C++ guys, is the simplest. Please complete the regular expression matcher. It has something for you in it. And don't cheat and look at the web. You are going to find a solution that you will not understand. And it's not going to help you. It will help you if you invent it. And I'll help you to do that. And the other one is a symbolic convolution. Okay? So if you program in Java or in C++, this is your exercise. Forget about regular expressions and abstract syntax trees. Here is your exercise. I give you two lists, not two arrays, two lists. That means that you have to traverse them. One is x1 dot 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 xn. The other one is y1 dot 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 yn for some xn and yn. They have the same length, but I don't tell you which length. And I would like you to compute the convolution of this, which is to return a list of pairs. And the first pair has the first element of the list and the last element of the other list, and so on, up to the last element of the first list and the first element of the second list. So if you're a Haskell guy, you say, sure, I just write reverse zip and I'm done. Okay? So that's a known solution, because I don't want you to use zip, and I don't want you to use reverse, and I don't want you to use take, and I don't want you to use append, and I don't want you, okay? I want you to use recursive descent and quants. And I would like you to do it in n recursive calls. Okay, so that's the cinch. You can only traverse a list once. So that solution doesn't qualify, because as soon as you have reversed, you're done. You have exhausted your quota. Okay, and there is a beautiful solution, a very enlightening one, that will teach you something about recursion, which works like that. Okay, and if you just do that, I'll be happy. Now, if you're still hungry, and you might, I would like you to construct the list of prefixes of that solution. Okay, and I would like you to do that in n recursive calls. Okay, that one is more challenging. Okay, so, but for now, I would like you to compute that symbolic convolution. Just use cons, just use recursion, and you only have n recursive calls. Okay? So now pick your favorite exercise. I'll walk around and help you. And I want you to do these exercises. Do them. You will have learned something. You will be enlightened. And then for the last lecture tomorrow, I will give you an executive summary of, now that you feel that continuations are useful, what's the roadmap and what's the state of the art and what have people done and where you would like to look if you want to know more. All right? So have fun. I'll walk around you.